You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, November 18th, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, infectious disease expert and epidemiologist with Access Health Louisiana, the largest Medicaid providing clinic system in Louisiana, Dr. Mark Allen Derry will join us to discuss COVID at the holidays.
That's good.
Yes. Then we will talk to the co-president of the National Nurses United Union, Gene Ross. They are still not getting the proper equipment that nurses need, and they are obviously pressed across the country. Meanwhile, Pfizer's latest vaccine trials show a 95% efficacy. The vaccine still continues to be safe as tested. The FDA has now authorized its first home COVID test, or I should say the first COVID home test. Meanwhile, 12 million Americans face an unemployment cliff just after Christmas. Republicans seek to stop Maricopa certification. They're going to do a pretend recount in Wisconsin, and they relent on denying the validity the people of Detroit's votes. Judy Shelton's nomination to the Fed blessedly stalls. Nancy Pelosi, a little bit less blessedly, wins the nomination for Speaker of the House. Chuck Grassley, the latest COVID down player to catch COVID.
Oldest Republican.
Oldest Republican. Second oldest in the Senate. Rudy Giuliani's coup within a coup is netting him a cool $20,000 a day, or at least that's what he's billing. You never know if he's going to get paid. Alaska adopts the top four primaries and ranked choice voting. Trump fires the Department of Homeland Security expert who said the election wasn't fraudulent. And lastly, the FBI investigating the Texas Attorney General for corruption. All this and more on today's program. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us. Emma's here. We are in studio. Hello, Emma.
Hello, Sam.
Hope all is going well today as we are facing another round another day of increased COVID numbers.
Over 170,000 cases yesterday per what I heard this morning.
Axios has a piece, Emma, that says that people just aren't as interested in COVID anymore. As we are watching, there's two charts they have. One goes like peaks up here and then sort of drops slowly all the way down to November. And the other one goes almost the exact opposite.
Mm-hmm.
The one that goes the opposite is actually the increase in the number of COVID infections. The one that goes down over time is the one that people are interested in about reading and hearing on their podcast and their news. So we're doing a little counter programming today.
So since you're sick of COVID talk, come to COVID talk here. On
exactly.
The Majority Report.
Well, that is
necessary.
It's necessary. And that's basically the way that we do things. We try and have an exclusive audience. We're constantly,
you guys don't want to be told what you want to hear. You want to be told the reality.
Exactly. We weed them out. That's what we do here. In the meantime, talking about, wanting to hear something that they didn't, this story out of Wayne County, which of course is the county in which Detroit sits in Michigan. Donald Trump lost the election in Michigan, essentially in Detroit, because of the numbers there of people who voted against him.
So naturally, that's where all the fraud is.
Just coincidentally. And there were two Trumpistas, Republicans. Let's just call them Republicans. There's no point. That's redundant. If they're Republicans, they're for Trump. If they're for Trump, they're for Republicans. I mean, to the extent that we can make any type of, you know, legitimate generalizations about people. I mean, that's just basically the way it is.
You did a better job of marketing why Democrats should be winning than the Democrats did.
Yes. Well, there you go. Exactly. And so two members on the Wayne County Board of Elections came up with some incredibly specious reasons to say that they're not going to certify the vote coming out of Detroit. And we'll get into this later in the second part of the program as to just how this fell apart. And there was an incredibly dramatic moment on a Zoom call, if you will. Well, no, on a Zoom call. And that essentially forced two members of this Board of Elections to face the music. And it's another example. I mean, we'll talk more about this in the second half, about where social media actually has like real implications. You know, we've heard where, you know, when you've seen protests and people have video cameras and then they say, you know, the whole world is watching when they watch some shameful act by the police brutalizing some protesters. Well, you know, we live in a world now where the whole world is actually watching even some of the most sort of banal moments and some of the more or finding very dramatic moments in what would otherwise just be lost to history. You know, 20 years ago, we would not have heard about the conference call or the meeting if there was a situation where two members of the board of Wayne County Board of Elections decided not to certify Detroit. We would just, you know, we would hear that, but we wouldn't hear what had gone on. And it wouldn't, and we wouldn't be able to impact it. Just our hearing it has impacted it. But before that dramatic moment happened, the Republicans thought like, wow, we may actually have one tiny success, as sort of specious as it was, in pretending that there was something wrong with this election, that Donald Trump didn't really lose, that there was fraud. And here is Sean Hannity and Kayleigh McEnany. And do we have clarification on this? Every time Kayleigh McEnany goes on Fox, she goes on in some different capacity. Like they'll say she's coming on as the presidential spokesperson, which she is, or she's coming on as the campaign spokesperson, so she can't answer any questions about.
She wears a mustache. So, yeah,
exactly.
She wears Groucho glasses.
Or she's just coming on as a future commentator on Fox. We're not sure, but she's on Sean Hannity's show, and they're celebrating this. Very short-lived lack of certification of the Wayne County ballots.
Mass mail-out voting, live ammunition across the nation is what it was equivalent to, and it backfired. And Sean, I've just got to get to you with Michigan, which you mentioned there as you came to me. I held up these papers, these affidavits, 234 pages of sworn affidavits under penalty of perjury. County.
What did CNN say about when you held them up on this program? Didn't they accuse you of holding up blank sheets?
That's right. They did about a 10-minute monologue saying these were blank. They're not blank. In fact, these pages of paper from one county were the reason that you had a county.
Look, this is the closest I ever get to working in an office. Mm-hmm. But if you've got 234 papers, do you not bind them?
Yeah.
Do you not staple them?
Loose.
You don't have hole punches? Like, it seems to me like maybe they're not really using those papers for anything other than just a prop. Well, I don't know.
They're overcompensating. I mean, to prove you have evidence, you don't need to bring stacks of papers of evidence. This isn't like a detective show that you watch on the CW at age 13. Like, you can...
60 pages right here. As you can see, there's writing on there. All of this is documented that what she's holding in her hand is actually a farce.
Right.
It's right here.
No, I mean, they're all about, like, look at these papers. It's tangible evidence that we're correct. I mean, it could just be jibber-jabber on there. It could be the lyrics to American Pie. Nobody knows.
Do you remember when Donald Trump tried to argue to the American public that he was going to divest from all his businesses, and they just had a bunch of loose-leaf binders up there, and there was, again, a blank paper. But continue.
These pages of paper from one county were the reason that you had a county level Wayne County canvasser say we cannot certify this election because of these witnesses. They're real people. And one reporter tweeted out, this is the first time in my 20-year history I've ever seen something like this. A county commission refused to certify. It's because for the first time you have a president for fighting for the forgotten men and women in Detroit, in Philadelphia, in Democrat cities across the nation.
Nobody in this country can have confidence in this. Now,
there you go. Well, it turned out that they did have confidence, probably within 12 hours, I think, of that moment. They reversed themselves and essentially negotiated a deal where it's like, you pretend like you're auditing stuff so that we don't look too embarrassed.
Which they're kind of doing a version of in Wisconsin as well.
Exactly.
It's amazing to me because at this point, what they're doing is purely posturing for Trump's next venture and all of them maybe being a part of it. If Trump launches some sort of competitor to Fox News or to OANN or whatever he does, like, this is about drumming up excitement and anger in his base that he can carry over to wherever he goes next, because they know they're posturing. They know.
I think part of it also is Georgia, or at least that they initially thought this would help in Georgia. I'm not sure that that's the case. And it's going to be very difficult because you can only maintain this fake pursuit for so long. Every day we hear stories of lawyers dropping out of the case. I think they're on lawyer like number 12. And of course, the buck, and I do mean the buck, literally stops with Rudy Giuliani. He apparently has been trying to edge everybody out and charge $20,000 a day. I'm going to try that too, actually. Maybe we're going to see if we can get this audience down to just a couple of people. $20,000 a day, you got to pay me, though. That's what's going to have to happen.
Makes it a lot easier to pander.
Folks, if you're like most people, you don't go to the doctor or you don't go enough. Maybe you go when you're sick or hurt, but that's it. Thankfully, there's a practical and affordable way. Take control of your health and get personalized care from the comfort of your home. SteadyMD is your personal doctor online. It's telehealth and it's done right. What you do is you start by taking a quiz. You get matched with a licensed primary care physician who understands your health needs. Then you have a one-hour appointment with your doctor. After that, your doctor is available to you anytime by text, phone, video chat, unlimited access for only $99 a month with no additional visits, fees, or copays. Each SteadyMD doctor has a limited number of patients, so they have time to listen to you and give personal care that you deserve. SteadyMD can help you stay healthy, manage chronic conditions, deal with things like, I don't know, weight loss or sleeping better, lose anxiety issues. I went on there. I took the quiz. They ask you all sorts of questions like, what do you relate to, you know, when you see these images? The only thing was for me, it was basically dad, because they didn't have then just constantly talking about politics.
They didn't have but
they did. Exactly. But they did have a whole range of things. And then they ask you, sir, your health goals. For me, it was sleep better, less stress. And then just general, I want to be healthy. And they matched me. They asked me like what sports I play, and they matched me with doctors who share some of those traits. They were parents or snowboarders. Every year I always get like a snowboard accident. That always helps with my health. But they have experts at like weight maintenance or stress reduction, et cetera, et cetera. It was, and then they gave me three choices of doctors, and the quiz worked pretty well as far as I could tell. SteadyMD is now accepting members of all ages in all 50 states. You go to steadymd.com/majority, take the free quiz, see which doctor is a perfect fit for you. steadymd.com/majority. There's no risk, no long-term commitment to get started. That's steadymd.com/majority. Okay, now I want to welcome to the program, and the second time, Dr. Mark Allen Derry. He is an infectious disease physician and epidemiologist with Access Health Louisiana, where he is the medical director of the infectious diseases and chief innovation officer. Access Health Louisiana, of course, the largest Medicaid providing clinic system in Louisiana. Mark Allen, welcome back to the show.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
So I'm here with Emma Viglin, and you know, the last time we spoke was it was probably in April, a lot of things have transpired since that time. So I want to just start with that, and we should tell people that you had a tremendous amount of experience in Ebola, dealing with Ebola and other epidemics, pandemics. From where we were, like, I've been trying to rack my brain, like, you know, from where we were in April, where I think our sense was like, you know, people have dropped the ball here. The CDC is sort of like, you know, behind it a little bit. But what has developed since then is this sense that the response has been driven not just by incompetence, but by almost like an ideology. Have you ever, have you ever come across that? I mean, is that a common response to a pandemic where it's not just incompetence, but it's like, ideologically speaking, you shouldn't take precautions?
Right. You know, I often say the plan of action has been inaction. And that's the only way that you can do it. I mean, you know, the idea of having 50 states account for themselves to address the pandemic. And there's more than 2,500 public health departments or health departments. So you have 50 states, 50 governors doing 50 different things. You have some that have mask mandates, some that don't, some that are in various forms of opening or closing all over the country. You have 2,500 different public health departments or health departments that are all doing things completely different. Something like this is completely unheard of. And the analogy that I use is I was working for the World Health Organization during the Ebola epidemic. And I was very fortunate. I was in Freetown, which is in Sierra Leone, Freetown, which is the capital of Sierra Leone, where I was doing my investigations and looking for cases. And so I was in very high level meetings pretty regularly, government meetings, where they were very much addressing the issue on a regular basis. And the first thing they were addressing was misinformation. That was the first thing they had to fight. Then the second thing we had to fight was then addressing all the issues that has to come with an epidemic like Ebola. To see the complete inert activity, to see the fact that there is an inaction, and I think at sometime in like mid-June to late June, I had kind of like probably a mini nervous breakdown, and I'm very open about that because it occurred to me, oh my God, they're not doing anything. You know, the conversation you and I had was very much like, wow, something doesn't seem right. There should be Johnny on. You know, we then later learned that the president knew about this in late January. And to be perfectly honest with you, I think it is somewhat criminal that we are allowing this huge morbidity, and we don't even know what the long-term effects of coronavirus are. Maybe we'll talk about that later. But then the mortality that we're seeing here is, I think, the number three mortality behind something like the Civil War and World War II. And it's just kind of happening without any sort of – right now, I don't even know where the outrage is. They're not allowing a transition to occur. And more people are dying, and you have somebody like Dr. Fauci. You even actually had Biden even say, President-elect Biden say that as we continue to not have access to transition, more and more people are going to die. And it just seems like there just doesn't seem to be any sort of effect as a result of that. And as I was saying, I had a complete epiphany, which resulted in anxiety and somewhat of a nervous breakdown when it occurred to me that we're not doing anything about it. And right now we have the highest rates of cases in the world. We have the highest rates of mortality in the world. And right now, North Dakota has the highest mortality rate. If North Dakota were considered a country, it has the highest mortality rate than any other part of the world. And that's largely due to the fact that there's been inaction.
When we spoke back in April, you had told me that the history of pandemics is such that the second peak comes approximately six months after the first one and tends to be worse. And sadly, it appears that you were correct. We have improved, I think, we have improved the mortality rate as a function of therapies, and I think of realizing who is at most risk and being quite clear in that. But the bottom line is we are now, I mean, I'm looking at these numbers, and just in the past 14 days, we are up 40% in terms of the number of deaths. And we are up 50% in the number of hospitalized. We are up 79% in the number of cases. And cases is a leading indicator for those other two issues. So there's every reason to believe 14 days from now, we may be up closer to 50 or 60% on deaths and even higher on hospitalizations, if I understand how this works now. So let me ask you this from April. What has surprised you about coronavirus itself, if anything has? Like, what have we learned? I mean, at that time, we were just learning that, I think, if I remember correctly, you were saying, look, you got to keep washing hands, et cetera, et cetera. But it was just on the cusp of understanding that these things get aerosolized and that air, the communication via air is even more, prevalent than had been assumed at first.
Absolutely. In fact, I went back and listened. And so a couple things. One is I was criticized for speculating that it may be aerosolized. We now know it's aerosolized. So, and then I don't know if you remember, I was saying, I think we're probably less than a week away from having some mask mandates come down the line. And then that actually happened not too far afterwards. So I'm going to answer your question in two sides. I'll talk about the public health side, and then I'll talk about the virus side, the effects of the virus. The public health side, what has surprised me the most is that this virus is obviously it's a respiratory virus. The idea of touch and whatever, I'm an infectious diseases doctor. Of course, I want everybody to wash their hands regularly, right? So I like that everybody's been washing their hands. And the idea of not being able to shake hands anymore is great. I love the elbow bump, love the fist bump. Okay, great. So, but it's overwhelmingly a respiratory virus. There's no question about it. What has surprised me the most, though, was, and what we didn't know at the time, and most people say that it was an error, and I don't think so at all. When we talk about the masking, at first there was this mixed messaging of masking. There was no mixed messaging of masking. Yes, there was to a certain degree not the idea of not using masks that doctors and nurses needed in the hospital. So you could use any sort of cloth mask, to do that. It was the idea that asymptomatic transmission, we had no idea that 40% of asymptomatic transmission occurred. And once it became clear to us that there was such a high level of asymptomatic transmission, that's when we started hitting the mask big, big time, right? So at first we thought it was just like SARS, the SARS-CoV-1 virus, the SARS epidemic, or a lot of other viruses that you are most infectious when you are feeling symptomatic. So we knew that if you were sick with the coronavirus, you would stay home, you wouldn't be transmitting virus. The big shocking thing to me was the fact that it can be asymptomatically transmitted, hence the importance of masks and mask mandates. There's no question about that. And now, finally, the CDC has finally gotten around to recognizing, and this is something that we've known a long time as well, that masks not only – so my mask protects you, but then my mask also protects me as well. And I wish that had been the messaging from the get-go, because I think that we probably have a more of a buy-in for masking now.
Even if it's not an N95 mask, it cuts down transmission, even if it's just simply like a t-shirt mask or something.
Absolutely.
Like that.
Any sort of cloth mask, anything, a mask like this, for example, which is what I wear when I'm outside, and then I wear like a KN95 or a surgical mask when I'm indoors with other people. The second thing that has surprised me the most, and this is the thing that's probably the most important, is that we don't know what the long-term effects of this virus are. We recognize that the virus, over a period of time, even if it's asymptomatic, can have pulmonary scarring in your lungs. It can have inflammation of the heart, causing a condition called cardiomyopathy, which is inflammation of the heart, which can cause scarring of the heart as well. And then just recently, of course, we have all the central nervous system issues, the brain fog people talk about, the anxiety, the depression that comes after infection. But then also, recently, we've noticed that that it may also be a cause for infertility in men. And there has been evidence that has shown that there has been a virus has been found in testicles and has been a cause of infertility, at least for one person in this one paper that had been published. So we don't know what these long-term effects are. And when I speculate outward 2 or 3 years, as we start to be able to look in the rearview mirror and see all of the long-term effects, I think there's going to be a national reckoning. I think there's going to be a lot of anger and there's going to be a lot of frustration when people realize, especially as, you know, when we do the epidemiological studies to show, had we done this then, we could have eliminated all of this mortality or all this morbidity. And when people right. realize that may be a thing, I think that there's going to be a lot of frustration as to how we handled the coronavirus epidemic.
Is there a connection to viral load and having some of
100%
these intense effects? So the bigger the viral load, some of the consequences you're talking about are more likely?
Absolutely. We see it with HIV. For example, people who inject drugs get a much higher viral load of HIV versus when transmitted through sex. And those folks that get that much higher viral load, like let's say that are intravenous drug users, they die much quicker of AIDS. They progress to AIDS much faster and they die. We see it with Ebola. That was without question. And then now we're seeing it here that very likely that those with higher viral loads have more severe symptoms and also have more likely to die as well. Hence, the wearing of the mask is so important because let's say you are exposed to the coronavirus. Just even the wearing of the mask may significantly reduce that viral load. And a great one of my colleagues from UCSF, Monica Gandhi, wrote a really fascinating paper about this in the New England Journal, where she likened it to variolation or inoculation, which is what we used to do way back in the days when we used to vaccinate for smallpox. We would take a little bit of smallpox from one person, give it to somebody else. That's called inoculation. And you just give a little bit, and then it protects against smallpox. What we're seeing here is that, and she speculates, and it's a really fascinating theory, that just wearing of the mask may just give somebody just a little bit of virus, and that may account for why we're seeing so many asymptomatic cases.
So, and this actually is a question that I have in regards to the vaccines. Moderna announced, I guess it was, it feels like it was years ago, but I think it was yesterday, that it was 95% effective in their, you know, at this stage in their tests. One of the things that was both sort of like helpful and disturbing about it was that they needed to get to 154, I think it was, infections out of the 30,000 people. And they had projected that not to happen until like February. But because the American infection rate is now like literally graphing, looking like a rocket, that they will get there within the next 5 or 6 days. And so they will have a sense of, you know, between their placebo and their vaccination groups, just how effective it is, where these 150 infections lie in one or two of those groups. Pfizer announced today that as their test went on, they found it also at 95%, which is 5% higher, which means that the subsequent infections happened to people who got the placebo. Here's my question, and I think, you know, it's hard to sort of speculate how quickly they'll be able to roll that out. That's more of a production issue on some level. And then, you know, it's easier to get the Moderna, I think, vaccine to people because it doesn't require the same type of freezing that the Pfizer one does. But here's my question about both those vaccines. And this also leads to that question about asymptomatic. If you are asymptomatic, you can obviously pass it on, right? Is that the same with the vaccine? Like, can you be protected from getting it with the vaccination, but still get it enough to sort of hand it off?
Sam, that's an excellent question. That was actually one of the points I was going to bring up when we got to vaccines today, is that that is a huge unknown right now. So remember, both the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines were really announcements by press release. So we have not had a chance to actually read the papers or the journal articles, rather. And until we do, those are one of many questions that that we have to ask. I would imagine that this is completely speculative, but I would imagine if they had that information, that would have come out with the efficacy rates that they released as well. So, but we don't know. I think that it's too hard to say right now, but under ideal situations, yes, the vaccine hopefully will be able to prevent transmission of virus to other people. And if it does do that, we will get to a post-coronavirus era sooner than later, if that's the case.
And 95% efficacy, even if it doesn't do that, let's say, is still really incredible, because part of having a vaccine, the presumption is that only a certain percentage of people are going to take it, and you will get to a certain level of adoption, if you will, that then basically gives the virus very little room to move. It can't move in as many different directions as it normally would. And so it gets inhibited and it just sort of like fizzles out. But with 95% efficacy, I mean, that's assuming like, you know, people thought like, oh, 60, 70% is really would be like, because our flu vaccines aren't even that high and they are relatively effective. But at 95% efficacy, at that point, I almost, as me as an individual, let's say, like, I'm not as concerned with how many people take it. Then it's like, it's less of a herd issue and it's more of like it's less of a me issue. It's more of like a you issue if you don't take it.
Right. I mean, so you bring up a very good point. So one, I just want to be very clear. Yes, they're talking about 94.5% or 95%. And let me just explain what that number means. That essentially what that means is that if you, the person who gets the vaccine, are exposed to coronavirus after you are vaccinated and there's time to allow your immune system to build immunity to it, that if exposed to coronavirus, there's a 95% likelihood that you're not going to get the virus. So that's what that number essentially means. And the reason why it's so effective is that, let me just kind of take you guys back to college biology for a quick second. And those vaccines are what are referred to as
some bad news for you.
Yeah, I did not take college
biology. I hit the
I was
but please.
I was hopeful. That's right. You were probably pre-law. all right. So mRNA is part of the genetic code. These are mRNA viruses. We've never have had mRNA vaccines before. They were developing them for coronavirus. Moderna was actually in the process, or not the Moderna that we know of now, one of the entities of it, was actually working on this mRNA vaccine for the common cold coronavirus. And what the mRNA does is it's a piece of genetic code that gets inserted into us. It gets into cells. And what the cells do is they start pumping out the mRNA code is coding the spike protein of the coronavirus. We've all seen the coronavirus. It has all the spikes on it, right? So that spike protein is ubiquitous amongst all of the coronaviruses. So this may actually help us, and I haven't heard anybody say this, complete speculation, but that this may actually help against the common cold coronaviruses. That's one of those things that we need to see as we go on. But the reason why it's so effective is that the body's pumping out just the spike protein. The virus isn't there at all. It's not a live attenuated virus, nothing. It's just the protein. And the immune system antibodies are generated and latched to that spike protein. And once you start building up that immunity, if then exposed again to the real virus, your body's already been primed to actually take care of it. And so that's why there's been this high rates. And that's why, because they're using the same technology, it's amazing that you have two different companies that are having the same levels of efficacy as well. It's really remarkable. And I agree, hopefully this is something that could actually, quote unquote, and I've said this a million times, but this hopefully could be a game changer.
Maybe in the future we'll come back. It's a story I know, I've done a little reading about this mRNA, and it was sort of like the laughing stock for a while, I guess, in this industry, this area, where people are like, you know, this is mad scientist stuff and quackery on some level. And so all these things were sitting on the shelf and were pulled off because it sounds like people are just like, whatever you got, try it at this point.
Absolutely. And of course, the Moderna vaccine came from National Institutes of Health. So the fact that Dr. Fauci had, and I, you know, Dr. Fauci's an infectious disease doctor, he's the premier of us all, you know, and so when he really put his interest, when they gave money through Operation Warp Speed to Moderna to do this mRNA vaccine, it did implant kind of like a level of justification for them to continue to do that work. If hopefully these vaccines will prove to be successful, if this is the case, we are going to see a shift now toward a lot more of these mRNA vaccines because we can produce them very, very quickly. You don't have to go through all the rigmarole to produce the older type of vaccines like influenza that needs to be in, you know, in egg products and this sort of stuff. It takes a long time because you need a lot of eggs because there's a lot of people, right? So if you could get away through all of those difficulties with respect to development of a vaccine and use this mRNA where you inject a little bit of genetic code, and then that genetic code kicks out an antigen. Antigen is the part of the an organism that antibodies latch onto. And if we can do that with other vaccines, we can be in a much better position when we do get to COVID-22. Because, as I said the last time, yes, the things that we have that got us to COVID-19, we have not changed with respect to that may prevent COVID-22.
I have quoted you many times, and I should just remind the audience that when I asked you what you were most afraid of what's going on, you said COVID-2022, and I quote that quite a bit in a lot of conversations. All right, so just quickly, based upon what you know about RNA, and of course, like, we haven't seen any of the papers, all the caveats that are there. There have not been really much reported side effects, maybe some nausea, maybe a little bit of a headache. But is that consistent with what you know about that type of technology, I guess?
I'm a little out of my, world. So this is completely speculative. I've heard interviews with the scientists. I've read a lot about the vaccines, and I'm reading between their lines. As a physician, as an epidemiologist, as an infectious disease doctor, I really do believe that this is going to be a safe vaccine. I really, really do. I was initially a little hesitant. I was a little off put by the speed. And of course, the politicization of the whole thing was just like anybody else, had me somewhat hesitant. Of course, we need to read the papers. Of course, we need to see the safety data. That being said, the interviews that I'm reading with the scientists, and of course, they're putting out their best foot. They're putting out the people who are going to say all the right things or whatever. I understand all that. But when I read between their lines, I believe that this is going to be actually a positive thing. I think that if it's true that this technology of being able to inject mRNA so that cells take it up and they kick out this antigen and that it does not interfere with any other functioning, that this could potentially be, again, not only a game changer for coronavirus 2019, but any future coronaviruses or Ebola, influenza, avian flu, what have you. This could be something that would be a remarkable technology upgrade to vaccines and to preparing us for pandemics in the future.
Okay, so lastly, we are a week and a half from a week from Thanksgiving. Today, a lot of people are going to be traveling. I think it's like, you know, depending on what part of the country we're talking about. I mean, I can tell you in New York, at least in, you know, in South Brooklyn, mask wearing, at least outside, there is a tremendously high compliance. And even as you're walking down Flatbush, I don't see anybody for, you know, maybe a block. Just the idea that person's wearing a mask and I'm wearing a mask sort of indicates to me that, like, we're signaling to each other, we're taking it seriously. I know I don't need to wear a mask a block away from you. You know you don't need it from me, but it's our way of indicating this is the right thing to do. And if we go into other places and we're being careful, we're taking, I'm sitting right now in a studio with Emma, but she's on the other side of the room, I've got plastic sheeting all across here. We've got air filters over there. I've got humidifiers. I got the window open. It's a little chilly. I got my sweater vest on. If people are going to get together and in reasonable numbers of people, you know, maybe I have one person come into my sort of pod, as it were. What are the precautions that people can take that will mitigate that risk? Obviously, mask wearing. Does my HEPA air filter do anything?
I don't think so.
Doing anything? Are the window? What's happening?
Okay, so one, please don't do it. Like, you know, when I got married, my wife was like, Thanksgiving is our families. You're just going to have to deal with it. And so when my mother-in-law called and said Thanksgiving, we were like, absolutely not. There's no way in the world. We're actually doing something, just the two of us as well. I would recommend that because what we're going to see, and just kind of going backwards for a quick second, when I did say that, yes, we have known traditionally that in pandemics, especially pandemics caused by respiratory viruses, that there's always a winter peak. And what we always, and what I have always thought, and this is something I've told you in the past, I've been studying since I was 14, because epidemics were just fascinating for me, was we always thought it was the cold. People go in for the winter, they go indoors, you know, but it wasn't necessarily something that we saw, you know, in the Southern Hemisphere, but we did see here, and then of course cases go up. But what I'm realizing now, it's not just the cold, it's pandemic fatigue. But I never realized it before because I'd never gone through a pandemic, and most epidemiologists obviously had never done it as well. I think that it is the cold that's driving people together and increasing cases and transmission that leads to that second wave, but it's also pandemic fatigue because people then are starting to let their guards down. And I'm telling you, what we're going to see in February pales in comparison to what we're going to see here, what we're seeing now. You know, I live in New Orleans, right? And the big discussion is Mardi Gras. No, there's no Mardi Gras. Like, that's it. Like, Mardi Gras, the idea of having Mardi Gras is what caused what happened in New Orleans in April was because of Mardi Gras. We're going to see so many cases in February because of Thanksgiving and because of Christmas and the fact that people are fatigued. They want to be with their families. They want to do these sorts of things. So to answer your question, if it happens, and El País, which is a Spanish newspaper, did a wonderful article. It was more of a graphics, and it's called like a room, a bar, and a classroom. And when you don't look at it on your phone, look at it on your computer. And when you scroll through it, it goes through showing these beautiful animations of how if you're in a room with no ventilation and nobody wearing masks and you have one person who's positive, everybody's going to get positive within 4 hours. If you have some masks, you'll have maybe, you know, 4 out of the 5 people will have virus. If you open up the window and increase circulation, we know that that will significantly decrease that transmission. And we saw that from a study that happened in Germany where the two towns in Germany put students back to school. They were maskless, which is incredible. But what they did is they increased the ventilation system in the schools significantly, such that they drove transmission to almost zero as a result of doing that. And what we've seen is that circulation of air when you're indoors is so incredibly important, probably as important as mask wearing. So if people are going to do it, they should sequester themselves for 14 days. So that means they should have done it starting a couple days ago at the time of this recording. Get tests. We know that the rapid tests for asymptomatic people don't perform well when compared to a rapid test for symptomatic people. So people should, if you're asymptomatic, you should have a PCR test. But of course, the problems with that is that it takes several days for those results to come back. But if you can do that, 14 days quarantine, a PCR test ideally, and then drive to wherever it is that you're going and then remain masked indoors with ventilation, that's probably the safest way you can do it.
Mark Allen, Derry, thank you so much for your time today. I can't tell you how much I appreciate this. We will check back in with you. And this time we won't wait 6 months. I suspect February is going to be really difficult in this country. And spring hopefully will bring some better news. But I think we're in for a real difficulty. And I have to say that, honestly, like I have been planning these months now based upon our last conversation. And so I really appreciate the information. And I also want to say folks should visit maskupcoviddown.com, which I know you're involved with. And it's an attempt to get people to educate people at a time where there's like almost an equal force to diseducate them about mask wearing. So this is a good resource for folks.
Absolutely. We're doing this 28-day challenge based on a op-ed that I wrote that went viral in June that basically said if everybody just masked for 28 days, why 28 days? The incubation period of the virus is 14 days. Two incubation periods is traditionally what we consider to be a elimination of a virus during a pandemic like Ebola or whatever. So 28 days of mask wearing, if the whole country just did it for 28 days, indoors, outdoors, what have you, we would see a rapid elimination of virus. So Mask Up, COVID Down is the website, and we're doing it with Masks for America, which I'm on the board with as well. We've distributed about 1 million pieces of PPE since the beginning of the pandemic. So thanks for that plug.
Mark Alandari, thanks so much today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Emma. Nice to see you.
Much.
All right, quick break. When we come back, we're going to be talking to Jean Ross. She's the co-president of the Nurses National Union. We'll be right back. We are back. Pleasure to welcome to the program Jean Ross. She is the co-president of the National Nurses United. Welcome back to the program. Do we have Jean? Jeannie there?
I am.
Oh, there you go. Thanks so much for joining us, Jean. You know, it's also been some months since we have spoken, and wanted to check in with you because we just spoke to an epidemiologist and who, you know, suggested that, February is going to be even darker than things are now, but you know we can look at the numbers, and the graph in this country is going straight up, and the not only infections, hospitalizations are going straight up in terms of a graph, and that that has direct impact on caregivers and nurses. And 6 months into this, 7 months into this, I guess my question to you is what it was months ago. Are we doing enough to provide support for these people?
Well, what's been done is clearly not enough to provide support for us and other healthcare workers, especially in the hospitals. We are still short of PPE, believe it or not. There is no coordinated pattern. Coordination is sadly, sadly needed. Nurses and other healthcare workers are being forced to work ill, which is not good for our patients, certainly not good for us and our families. We are very, very stressed and sleeping less. Some of us are getting a little depressed, but I will tell you that most nurses have a really good attitude about this. They're doing what they're meant to do. We would not be so stressed from a surge if employers and the government would do what they're supposed to do to protect us and the patients.
How many nurses have died at this point in the course of providing care for folks with COVID?
I believe our last number was 245, and it's gone up. It was a low count then, and it's gone up.
And so what at this point, I mean, because it seems to me the biggest problem that we're about to hit is, you know, there have been therapies that have improved, mortality rates are down, we're protecting the most vulnerable people, but hospitalizations happen, and we are getting dangerously close to, at various parts around the country, and certainly we're already there in some countries where, parts of the country where we're getting past the threshold of ICU beds, not just as measured by beds, but in terms of the people who can care for the people in those, I mean, we can always, you know, you can always set up a tent and put beds in there. But if you don't have trained personnel, it doesn't matter. And we're dangerously close to that point, aren't we?
We are. You know, I live and work out of Minnesota. So We're not doing any better than anyone else, despite the fact that Minnesota's always had a reputation for having excellent health care and making that one of our major focuses. We have employers that don't seem to understand basics, like cohorting COVID patients with COVID patients instead of putting them among the regular population. You have employers, as I mentioned, still not having enough PPE, forcing nurses to reuse it. All of those things go toward kind of ensuring that your nurses and other healthcare workers are being put more at risk than they need to be. And we will end up with the situation you're talking about. We're already short-staffed. We were before the pandemic hit because of the emphasis on the bottom line, as opposed to having enough staff to safely care for patients.
This is a story I think that has been completely undertold, and certainly in the context of New York State, I know that better because I'm in here. But 10 to 20% of our public hospitals were shut down in the lead up. Just in the time prior to COVID, people didn't assume it was there. We don't need the extra capacity, apparently. And then, of course, we find out when we do. And this is all a function of essentially the consolidation of the hospital business, if you will, the medical business, and these consolidators and these large companies trying to squeeze every dime they can out of our care, as opposed to making sure that we have a little bit of slack, because who knows, maybe there's an epidemic.
That's exactly right. We don't need to have pandemic-sized proportions of facilities, healthcare workers, beds all the time. But you do need to have that give there. And we had asked before Ebola even, what is your plan? Pandemics are coming, folks. What is your plan? We can have a plan. Work with us. It was poo-pooed. We were frankly lied to, or you're there. There is a plan. We just can't tell you about it yet. That kind of thing. So nurses and doctors have been begging, insisting on a plan, especially for a surge, especially for a pandemic. I believe the Obama administration had something in plan after H1N2. They had started it. That was dismantled. There's been nothing to take its place. And I think the real crime here is that the shutdown that people complained about so was done at a good time, and we just completely wasted all those weeks and months not prepared. That's what that time was to be used for.
All right, we just have a minute or two left. Like, what at this point can folks do to support nurses and frontline caregivers at this point?
Well, make sure that what we're telling you now stays in the forefront. Do all the things we and other experts tell you to do, the physical distancing, the masking, the hand washing. It really does work. Please listen to the restrictions. Beyond that, you can go to our website, nationalnursesunited.org. We have petitions to sign. Get those nurses and other workers there. PPE, get that temporary emergency OSHA standard in place that tells employers you must have at least this minimum of PPE for them. Do that, and I think the public will be helpful.
I think people are probably, hopefully, shocked that 7 months into this, we have not been able to deliver the basic protection for frontline workers that I think a lot of people just assume was there. But Gene Ross, co-president, National Nurses United, thanks so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. And good luck to you guys. And thank you for all the work you're doing.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's just about it for us at this point. But I'll tell you, Emma, this notion of the way that we run our healthcare system in this country, both in terms of, you know, I think we spend a lot of time talking about the failure of a mechanism to pay for it. But there's also a massive failure in the delivery of medicine, because there's this theory of basically it's the functional equivalent of just-in-time supply lines, right? Like, we don't want any excess capacity, mm-hmm. because that cuts into our profit center. Frankly, it reminds me about Katrina, the response to Katrina back in 2005. They had privatized all the buses. They had privatized all the evacuation stuff. And you had They had outsourced it to one company that had subcontracted to another and another, and they didn't get those buses there and have them waiting because they didn't want to waste their profit by doing something they didn't need to do. But
I mean, we're seeing that too with just the reaction to the vaccine and the fact that they're in any sane system, we wouldn't be wondering whether the news about the vaccine is just basically a press release to inflate their stock price. But I mean, this does look promising, but the fact that we have to have that conversation is concerning in itself. And also we might've had some sort of collaborative effort between these massive corporations with all these resources, but nevertheless.
All right, folks, that's it for us today. We'll see you tomorrow. Unless, of course, you're sticking around for the fun half of the show. And just a reminder, this program, if you missed any part of this program, you can check it out at on Peacock, the NBC app. We're on the Choice channel, and we play at 5 p.m. and then again at 10 p.m. every day. And there's more. I just got an IM. Moon in the Lake. And sorry, this guy's wrong. There will be no reckoning and no Republican be held accountable for their malicious handling of COVID. I think if I had to take a guess, I would agree. There's going to be no reckoning. I think within the context of the medical field, there'll probably be a little bit of like their, you know, scientists will probably look at this and say like, you know, we could have done this, we could have done that. But as a political matter, I think people are going to just try and,
I think it depends if there's a long-term effect, like, you know, these, like we were talking about earlier, there's some people who talk about the sleeping sickness that developed in the 20s after the Spanish flu that may have been a long-term effect of the Spanish flu. If there's something like that, I think we'll see like a sort of, you know, like the thalidomide reaction or something like that in the medical field. I mean, yeah, I don't think it's going to be.
A majority of our politicians were already okay with like nearly 30,000 Americans dying every year without health insurance. So I just like don't see them calling into account another healthcare malfeasance.
Oh, without doubt. I mean, you know, thalidomide, yes, that was an issue, but that was, I think that is because A, there was like a physical manifestation that people could see the implications of it. And B, it was, you could narrowly blame one small, you know, entity for pushing this drug. And then, and there were probably doctors who were like, I thought it was something different. Right. I mean, I think, and you can look at like something like Agent Orange and you can see the implications of it later on our returning vets. And even that with all the sort of like investment that the country has in the health of vets was, you know, largely ignored. And there's still like, there's multiple iterations of that Agent Orange stuff. I think, you know, you read about the 1918 pandemic and it was wiped from our history. I mean, not totally, but
right.
I mean, it, you know, I realized like my grandmother was alive during that. My grandmother was my son's age during that pandemic. I had, you know, my great uncle who my son is named after, he was alive during that time. It never even occurred to me to ask them about it. I never even knew that much about it at all. And I think there is, you know, every book that I've read about the 1918 pandemic, there is, you know, like almost like on page one is like, this is like forgotten history. And there was almost like a willful amnesia about it. And, and Wilson denied the whole thing too, right? Didn't he? Like isn't that the story? And some suspect that he may have had it. And some suspect that may be actually what ultimately led to World War II, because he went into, signed those treaties and gave up his principles to sort of like not be so,
kind of an eerie parallel, like a notoriously racist president catches the disease in the middle of this pandemic and doesn't take it seriously.
Well, it had mental implications. And supposedly when he went off, to negotiate, the treaty that he forgot or just like gave up on his like principles to not be too harsh on Germany. And, because he was afraid of a backlash. Well, man. And, but I, it's not hard for me to imagine that we're going to be so, just sick of it as a society that nobody's going to like, we're not going to revisit anything about it.
Right. Right.
It's just, and I, like, I feel like that with Trump on some level too. Like our society is just going to run and run and run until, you know, Tom Cotton starts like setting up the, FEMA camps.
Right.
Then people are going to like, you know, maybe we should have actually taken like the long-term implications of Trump a little more seriously or whatever it is. But, folks, we're going to head into the, fun half of the program where things are really going to get fun.
After that, just my spirits are up, up, up.
Mark Alain Derry is, he's
awesome.
Awesome. And people should go back and listen to that interview. Is it actually an interview I originally did for Ring of Fire? And I was like, and it was supposed to be like a 15 minute interview. And we ended up talking like 45 minutes. And so we played it on this program as well. And he was, right.
Mm-hmm.
About everything, and which also scares me about 2022.
Yeah.
I mean, I had asked him, I said, what scares you the most about this at the end of the, and he's like, well, 2020, you know, COVID 2022. But if he's right about the vaccination, and there is a story about this mRNA, it was like the sort of like, you know,
right. Like it sounds like some sort of movie plot, you know, that if we ever revisit it, maybe they'll make some Spielbergian movie about like this science was not considered.
Yeah. It was just like, yeah, people, it wasn't so much that it wasn't like, you know, it wasn't woo medicine, but people just felt like this is a, you're pursuing a dead end.
Right.
And, you know, I don't know what it means to be maligned in that type of industry. But it was there, and I think there was like whatever you got on the shelves, pull it out, see if it'll work, and it appears that it might, and it also appears that it might like have implications for
future vaccines.
Yeah, but even like protecting us from colds, because right. What it sounds like is you have these coronavirus proteins that impact the body in a certain way. Regardless of what the specific traits about these coronaviruses are, it has to do with their structure. And from what I understand, and I probably not understanding it properly, it's almost like the vaccine teaches the body to be impervious to the structure, not necessarily even the content. And so you're addressing a whole class of things that attack the body. Because you're just building up certain, for lack of my inability to express it, muscles that fight that off. So it's like, I don't know, it's like training to fight somebody in Krav Maga, but you're also pretty good when they come at you with some Taekwondo moves. I don't know. That may have been that. I'll wait for a doctor in the fun half to call in and say that's absolutely wrong. All right, folks. Just a reminder, you can support this program by going to join the Majority Report and becoming a member. You can also support this program by giving us, you know, likes on iTunes and, I don't know. I guess that's about it. I mean, there's other ways. Tell your friends. Come on. Or subscribe on our YouTube channel.
Yeah.
That's the other thing I should be doing.
Share it on social media.
Yeah. Share it on the social media. Do all that stuff. Also, amquickie.com, 7 minutes of headline news every morning. Amquickie.com. Don't forget justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code majority, get 10% off. We have merch. You can go to shop.majorityreportradio.com. We should start modeling some of the merch. Maybe carpenter pencils, stuff like that.
Yeah. I'll model the carpenter pencils.
There you go.
I'll put my hand out.
Don't forget, Nomi's show today, youtube.com/the Nomi Key show. I'm not sure who's on, but, check it out. Always, worth seeing, youtube.com/the Nomi Key show. Also, check out the Antifada, patreon.com/the Antifada. Matt, what did you guys do on TMBS last night?
David talked to Paul O'Connell about Labour and sort of Keir Starmer's consolidation of power there and why, you know, it's good that Corbyn is reinstated, but it's not exactly a major victory. And there's some structural things and major obstacles to go in over in the UK. So check that out at the Michael Brooks Show YouTube page.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
In for it.
All right, folks. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half. Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back, 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 back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back, back.
I take all of it in my throat.
Alpha males are back.
Almost says what?
The alpha males are back, 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 back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back, back, back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Danerke song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danerke.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, folks! Reminder!
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are
psych.
Fuck them. Fuck them.
Almost says what?
What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What?
What? What? What?
What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What? What?
All lives matter. Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
The alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black Africans. The alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, black, black.
See Donald Trump out there? Doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100. Can't knock the hustle.
Come on! Fuck them! Fuck them! Fuck them!
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday!
My birthday!
Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back, back. Black, black.
Come on!
What?
Come on!
What?
Come on! Someone needs to pay the price for blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy. 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 Pussy.